You're listening to the WFYI News Podcast for the week of September 28th through October 2nd, 2015. I'm Christopher Ayers. This week, from our series Intersections, the role food plays in fighting inner city crime.
Community members are very aware of the needs in their community, and it's up to us to listen to what that need is and that one is.
A 13-year-old program designed to send Indianapolis students to Purdue University gets a revamp.
Could it be improved and made better? Of course it can, and we're trying to do that.
And an interview with this month's WFYI Small Studio guest. Those stories and more are coming up. Please stay tuned. For 13 years, Purdue University, Indianapolis Public Schools, and the Indianapolis business community have provided a pathway for low-income and first-generation college-bound IPS students to attend the West Lafayette School. But the program, which is called Science Bound, has remained largely under the radar. WFYI education reporter Eric Weddle explains how a new name and affiliation with a new high school could change that.
No, this is for It's after school at Arsenal Tech High, and a couple dozen juniors and seniors are tearing into bags of chips and working on resumes and financial aid forms.
Yes, I am interested in learning more about motorsports.
This is Science Bound, a hands-on multi-year program to prepare students for college and a career in math and technology. But something else also attracts them.
Definitely the money, but actually the studying part is also really helpful too. My name is Dominique Bennett, and I've been in Science Bound since I was in ninth grade.
If these students maintain a B average, stay out of trouble, and attend most of the program's activities, like summer camps, internships, and test prep courses, they're eligible for a full ride scholarship to Purdue. And for some, that's reason enough to attend Tech, Crispus Attucks, or Shortridge, the only Indianapolis high schools that offer Science Bound. For others, it gives them a needed boost.
If Science Bound wasn't available, I'd probably be going to a different high school. My name's Pat Gregorick, and I'm a junior, and I've been going to Science Bound since I was in 8th grade.
My name's Alan Condry. I'm a senior. I've been in Science Bound since 7th grade. I mean, I'd still be looking at colleges. Purdue would still probably be on the list for that. It would just be way bigger of a struggle to get through.
Teacher mentors spend years helping these students navigate the path to college and keeping them on track. They organize trips to Purdue, help them with studying, and connect them with local businesses like Rolls-Royce. And students, they start as early as 6th grade in the program, learning about science and getting their hands dirty with experiments. Then, they focus on getting internships for their summer after junior year. During their senior year, they apply for college, whether it be Purdue or somewhere else. And now, the program is going through a slight revamp.
The name has changed. It's now Purdue Bound.
That's Wesley Campbell, the program director on the West Lafayette campus. He says the rebranding lets students know they can seek all types of degrees within science, like engineering, technology, nursing, or pharmacy. Purdue Bound will also become a core part of the Purdue Polytechnic Indianapolis High School, a charter school the university expects to open in fall 2017. Since 2007, 307 IPS students completed the program and were eligible for the Purdue scholarship. Of those, about 60% went to Purdue. The rest chose other colleges. And since 2011, 63 students have graduated as Boilermakers.
We've actually doubled the number of students from IPS that are coming to Purdue. And so in that sense, we believe it's a success. So we know we're impacting not only the students, but we're changing lives one family at a time. But now, could it be improved and made better? Of course it can. And we're trying to do that with IPS.
Campbell would like IPS to make available more options for advanced math, like second-year calculus. That will make Purdue Bound students more competitive when they apply for the university, he says. Back in Elvia Solis's class at Arsenal Tech, she is helping students complete their resumes. She teaches Earth Science and AP Environmental Science and has been involved with Science Bound since it began. Solis says the program makes students realize they can get into a top four-year college if they try hard enough.
Why do I keep doing it? Because I like working with these kids. I like knowing that that maybe, you know, we can get some of them somewhere where they didn't think they could.
For 90.1 WFYI News, I'm Eric Weddle.
This story is part of WFYI's American Graduate Initiative. For more information, go to WFYI.org. When you're new to something, it takes a lot of trial and error to figure out a rhythm. For first-time teachers, this process happens with dozens of students acting as their pedagogical guinea pigs. State Impact Indiana's Claire McInerney is taking this school year to follow three first-year teachers as they begin their new careers. And she's looking to find out, now that they're a few weeks into the school year, what's working in their classrooms and what's not.
I'm going to sit here. You have 30 seconds to get it together or we're not playing.
Gabe Hoffman's third grade class at Nora Elementary has a math test tomorrow, so he's leading them in a review game. He writes an addition or subtraction problem on the board, and they solve it on their own. If a student gets it wrong, he or she is out. But right now, the group is talking too much when they should be working.
You guys are really, really close to just doing the review sheet.
Hoffman's frustrated because he wants to play games with his students and make the test review fun. But 6 weeks into the school year, he's getting a handle on what types of games work and don't work with his kids.
So it just depends. You have to really find out what fits your kids' needs. I know.
For Hoffman, he's learned his students can't focus when they play games in teams, and he has to give them more structure when doing group work.
I know other teachers that they can do whatever one they want, and the kids are fine getting right back together. But I have a group that I have a couple in the room that are particularly like able to amp up everybody else. So.
Which has caused some growing pains for Hoffman. Today's review game is a good example. Since the kids came back from recess, they've had trouble calming down and focusing on their work. He tried playing a two-minute educational video to calm them down. He read aloud from a novel they're reading as a class and had them work in small groups using class computers. But they keep getting rowdy. Yep. So Hoffman ends the game.
Yep. We're not playing anymore.
Nope.
I'm getting
Heidi Torres teaches undergraduate curriculum classes at Indiana University. She says helping future teachers be prepared for any situation is more important than arming them with individual teaching strategies.
And recognizing that a strategy that I give you may not work in this classroom, but it will work in this one. And so having what we like to call a toolbox, because not everything works everywhere in the same way.
The book that we are going to be reading today for our mini lesson and reader's workshop is called Poppleton Forever.
One of the tactics Sarah Draper has added to her toolbox is tailoring her behavior system to her students' needs. Every classroom at Helmsburg Elementary in Brown County uses a clip chart, where a student moves their clip up for good behavior and down for bad. And typically, this is how she awards a movement with the clip.
Aiden, Maddie, Corbin, Sophia, Allison, Natasha, you may all go clip that. Awesome job. I love the way that you brought your reading bag to the floor.
But almost immediately this fall, she noticed some of the kids were uncomfortable when she called them out, even when it was for good behavior.
So, I don't know if you noticed, but while I was walking around, and I saw someone, instead of saying, wow, you can go clip up, you're doing such an awesome job reading, I would just say, like, you can go clip up, you're doing awesome. And then they're so excited, then they just, like, walk over there and, you know, move their clip, but they're not singled out in front of the whole class. So.
Which makes them feel more comfortable in the classroom. And as much as these new teachers want that for their kids, they themselves are trying all these different approaches to teaching so they can feel comfortable, too, in their new role as educators. And some days it's frustrating. Chris Conway, a fifth-grade math and science teacher at Riverside Intermediate School in Fishers, recalls one day when none of his kids grasped a lesson on fractions.
The way I taught it, they just did not get it the way I wanted them to. So I went home and I thought about a different way to do it. I came back the next day with a totally different way to do it, and I just saw light bulbs going off all over the classroom.
And that's what it's all about. Conway found a way to connect with his students so they understood the lesson. And at the end of the day, Conway says he left school feeling like he'd done a good job. For State Impact Indiana, I'm Claire McInerney.
You can learn more about the first-year teachers, including biographies, and more audio stories like this at indianapublicmedia.org/the first year. Last summer, a series of mobile food pantries popped up in six of Indianapolis's most distressed neighborhoods. They were some of the most visible and most popular parts of an ambitious crime-fighting plan being implemented by the city. In this installment of our series Intersections, 90.1 WFYI's Jill Sheridan explores the role that food plays in fighting crime and why food pantries aren't the only way to combat hunger.
The mobile food pantries are over, at least for now. But this summer, they drew hundreds of people each week, including Janice Mucker. She's a retired social worker, and she's lived in Hawville for about 40 years. Mucker's in her 70s and says she depleted her retirement savings caring for family. So she came to the Gleaners food giveaway in this Kroger parking lot to make her budget go a little farther.
Because I'm just coming out of a financial bind because I did have my two great-granddaughters. And I emptied out my IRA to get them beds and clothing and all that sort of stuff. Because I did that, it didn't make me eligible for food stamps. So everything, you know, came from my pocket.
One thing from this table, so potatoes.
In Marion County, nearly 19% of people lack reliable access to enough nutritious, affordable food, according to the hunger relief charity organization Feeding America. It's a big problem in neighborhoods like Hawville, and public health experts say it figures into everything from children's poor performance in school to health problems for adults. Gleaners Food Bank CEO Cindy Hubert says her organization jumped at the chance to be part of the Department of Public Safety's Holistic Anti-Crime Initiative.
We thought early on if we could step in and provide the food, that that was one less piece that people needed to stress about.
But the food banks were also aimed at something more, bridging a gap between the police and a public that's often mistrustful of them. As he waited in line with his mother and grandson, Aaron Schumpert watched police officers and firefighters help carry boxes of food to waiting vehicles.
It's a good way to give back to the communities and show that there is positivity with the police and the fire department in regards to the community relationship. So I just believe it's a step. It's better than doing nothing.
Over the summer, Schumpert visited all of the food pantries in the six focus area neighborhoods, and he wasn't always getting groceries for himself.
But we take it and we give it to other people. But see, we take it and we just know, if we know somebody, if we see somebody, like my mother, neighbor, you know, his wife is not doing well, so she's taking it and giving it to him, and at least he has something to eat.
I'm wondering about the tomato, and I'm wondering about the price change.
It changes daily. That's today's price. You get 10 tomatoes for a dollar.
J.R. Dalton grew up on the west side, cool. And for years he's run a food pantry in one of his buildings on West 10th Street. On Saturday mornings, the line of people waiting for food sometimes stretches for blocks. Now he's started a store called Ripe and Ready, where he sells ready produce at a very deep discount. Dalton says that for him, food is a form of ministry.
You know, a little boy comes to me one day and I said, Danny, what's it like when you've been really hungry? And he started to cry and he says, JR, it's like a black hole in my stomach. And it's so painful. It's hard to speak to anyone that's empty and hungry, even if you were to speak to them about Christ, because they want to be fed physically before spiritually.
Janice Mucker's freezer is stocked with some of the goods she got from Gleaners, cut up and ready to cook. It's a technique she learned from her grandmother.
And she'd just get all the stuff that people, you know, they couldn't sell. And she'd bring it back and she'd pare it up, take off the rotten places, this, that, the other. She always had, put all the vegetables together around what it was, and had like a vegetable soup or whatever. It was nutritious and everything.
And inspired by a friend who shares food she gets at neighborhood pantries, Mucker likes to help out her loved ones too.
But she was always giving stuff away. I'm going to bring you this, I'm going to bring you that, and you know. But you know, it's helpful. And then like you say, you know, it's passing on. Kids, grandkids, whatever, people at church.
Mucker says having that close circle of friends at church and a family around helps her feel safe in Hawville, a place that's long struggled with crime. And though her son sometimes asks why she bought her house in the neighborhood 16 years ago, she tells him, quote, Hawville's been good to me. Public Safety Director David Wan says the focus area plan can't succeed without good neighbors like Mucker and Dalton.
They're the folks that are going to make their neighborhood strong. They're the ones that are going to come together. And those are the people that we're really trying to assist so that the bad guys won't have a place to stay.
Yet as important as they are, these food giveaways aren't long-term solutions to food insecurity and neighborhood safety, says Whitney Fields, a program manager for the Indy Food Council. The group works on issues of food security and sustainability.
The only way that that's going to happen is the community supports it and buys into it, and it's community-grounded, right? So community members are very aware of the needs in their community and what they want. I think it's up to us to listen to what that need is and that one is.
The Gleaners mobile food effort served over 57,000 people this summer, but Far East Side resident Aaron Shumpert realizes that peace in the streets doesn't happen with one trip to the pantry.
And like I said, we still have to find something else to do, because when this end doesn't mean that, okay, this solved the problem. This is just a step.
Gleaners and DPS say they're looking for money and manpower to continue the mobile food pantry project, but Shumpert says,
it doesn't even have to be give away free food. If they could just bring the community together, then we won't be afraid of one another.
For 90.1 WFYI News, I'm Jill Sheridan.
You can see photos, maps, and more from Intersections online at WFYI.org/intersections. This week was the first one of the month, which means a brand new WFYI small studio session performance is now available online. Now, if you're heretofore unfamiliar with our small studio series, here are the details. Each month, we ask a musician or band, both local and nationally touring acts, to come into our studios and perform a small concert in our small studio. A small crew of WFYI videographers records that small concert, and the first Tuesday of every month, we post that small live performance to the World Wide Web. This month, we feature Brooklyn-based artist Kat Martino, whose band Stranger Cat appears on the Indianapolis-based record label Joyful Noise. 90.1 WFYI's Jill Dittmeyer spoke with Martino during her small studio visit.
Kat Martino always has a song brewing in her head.
A little melody will kind of catch me, and then it's in my head. And, you know, like a song can be in my head for days before I get a chance to get in front of my computer and record it and actually write it down. It's like happening already sometimes.
I lost it, no one cannot find. Again, I try to count the times.
It's been happening for most of her life.
My parents said I was singing before I was talking, you know. So I've just always been singing, and then I did choirs and theater growing up.
And then she heard Joni Mitchell.
And the seasons, they go round and round, and the pains and ponies go up and down. We're captive on a carousel of anxiety. Don't mess with me. No matter what you say, I'm gonna get you out my way. Oh.
Hearing her music was really the initial reason I started writing my own music, because I had been doing, been in bands in high school, and it just hadn't really dawned upon me to actually write my own music until I heard her music in high school. And then I realized, just heard this person sort of revealing their whole emotional world so articulately, and I was so moved by it, and I thought, well, I guess I could do that too, or try.
Her richly textured vocals and peppery instrumental sounds reveal her appreciation of many musical genres.
I love soul music so much, R&B, you know, Solomon Burke, Aretha Franklin. I love all of that. And but then I love rock and roll music. I love the Pixies. I love the Beatles. I love the Violent Femmes, you know? So
she's crisscrossing the country with her first record, Sirens, but,
you know, we're three people in the car, so sometimes when I get my chance to be in the back seat, I'll put on my headphones and open my computer and have a little mobile studio, and I have a couple of new songs brewing that I'm really excited about, and just really looking forward to starting Stranger Cat record number two.
You can see Stranger Cat's full small studio set and watch past small studio performances at WFYI.org/small studio. In the That's it for this edition of the WFYI Weekly News Podcast. You can follow us online at WFYI.org, on Twitter at WFYI News, and on Facebook, WFYI. This has been a production of WFYI News, produced at 90.1 WFYI Public Radio Studios in Indianapolis, Indiana. I'm Christopher Ayers. Thanks for listening.